Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Dr. John Stamey, and we're on a special edition of ScaryCast. We've got Matt Delf scheduled to be on with us. He is going to be on there, and hopefully Mark Johnston will make it. We're going to have a lot of fun tonight as we're going into the month before the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, the biggest thing in Clayton. I'll tell you, it's the biggest thing in Clayton, Georgia. And I'm absolutely thrilled that that we've got some great people coming on board, and we're going to have a lot of fun. We've got, of course, headlining it, Robin and Pat McCray. Robin and Pat are noted Bigfoot experiencers, and they have been around for quite a while doing this. Robin is just a sweetheart. She's kind of like my sister, so we just love her to death. And so we're going to have them. We're going to have Jessica Jones and her research partner, Matt Delf. That's going to be a lot of fun as well. I mean, you know, we don't all the time get great researchers because they're all busy out in the field. But we're just so glad that they are going to be there with us. And then let's see, we have some other great names coming on board for the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. We have got, well, Dr. John Stamey, I'm going to be there with my two brand new books, the Field Research Guide Second Edition and Introduction to Hominology that was co-authored with the one and only Dr. Igor Burtsev. That's going to be a blast. That's a great book. It's got some really good research and everything, and so that's going to be fun. At press time, as of right now, Dr. Trey Donaway from ScaryCast is going to be there. We're going to be having a ScaryCast panel along with Dr. Trey Donaway, Robin McCray, and Mark Johnston, and myself. We're going to have just a blast there. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Keith Pacetti from Wisconsin is going to be there. He's a Reiki master. He's going to be a lot of fun to talk to. And then Eric Hollifield, some people know him as Driveway Primitive. He's a really cool guy, and he's going to show us all about taking a casting of a Bigfoot print, because that's something you just can't know enough about. And then, of course, Reverend Lynn Myers, he's my buddy. He's going to make everybody mad, and I'm excited about it. He's a wonderful man. He's a preacher. He's a good guy. And he's going to be talking about UFOs, cryptids, and the Bible. So we've got an all-star cast coming to the Georgia Bigfoot. And first of all, tonight I want to recognize and welcome my co-host Mark Johnston from Niagara Falls, Canada. How are you doing tonight, Mark?
Excellent, John. And just listening to you there and all the great people that some of them I know personally and some of them I don't, it just seems like it's going to be a great lineup, and I'm really looking forward to be there and hear what everybody has to say, because I know, especially the people like Pat McCray and Robin McCray and Matt Delf, who's going to be on tonight, I know they all have such great things of value to say. And back in the day, like a few years ago when I first met you, you invited me on your show because of my personal Bigfoot encounter. And the person who was on your show was Matt Delf at the time. So I added him just to be like, you know, on Facebook, whatever. And ever since, we've kept in contact, but I haven't talked to him in a few months to a year now. So it's really nice just to have that conversation, which always feels great about your show. We just have a great conversation, and I look forward to talking to Matt and hearing what he has to say.
Absolutely. And now the man from Ewing, Virginia, near Norton, Virginia, where we have that great Bigfoot preserve, the one and only Matt Delf. How are you doing tonight, Matt?
Hey, guys. I'm doing good.
We're glad to have you here. And, okay, glad my first question is it cold? Is it cold up there in Ewing, Virginia?
It today got up into the mid-60s, so it wasn't too bad. But we did get about 9 inches of snow over the weekend, and it's kind of melting off. But it's been off and on, warm, cold, you know how it is.
Yeah,
I'd rather be
in Myrtle Beach,
Arizona or someplace.
Well, today I thought it was going to be nice and warm, and the temperature plummeted when the sun went down, and I mean, it was just freezing. And I don't, I don't like this cold weather. I hate to tell you this, Matt. I could not live with you up there in Ewing, Virginia. I think I would die. And Mark, you're beyond bound in Niagara Falls, Canada. I'll take dear old Murray Beach where it gets it. Do what?
Spring has sprung. Like the last few days I've been outside, and it's almost t-shirt weather up here in Canada. So, you know, hopefully things are turning, and it'll be good Bigfoot hunting season, I think, coming ahead when you get into the woods, right?
I come down there. Mark, now stop. What you call t-shirt season is 45 degrees. I don't want to hear that.
Yeah, we wear shorts up here in Canada all year round, you know, sometimes. Like, we're used to that, right? But I know down there in Myrtle Beach, it's a whole other story.
Yeah, that's right, sure is. Well, anyway, let's get down to our marvelous guest tonight, Matthew Delf. Matt, we're glad to have you here. And I want to let everybody know that you are a research partner and good friend of Jessica Jones, right?
Correct. So.
And we're going to have you and Jessica on the Monday, and we might do it Tuesday before the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. Would you be okay with that if we had you on two nights in a row to talk about Bigfoot?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm always up talking
about
Bigfoot.
I'll just ask Jessica if she can make it, because I'd love to have both of you there the two nights. We did something like that when we did the second Tennessee Bigfoot Conference, and it was a blast. So we'll see if we can do a doubleheader with you Monday and Tuesday night as we get into this very, very special time in Clayton, Georgia, and Rabun County. Beautiful location. Some of the nicest people that I've ever met. So now, Matt, the first thing I wanted to ask you, and this is very important, you said that there had been some Bigfoot, I believe albino Bigfoot sightings up on the ridge near the Bigfoot Preserve near Norton, Virginia. Is that correct?
Yeah. It was kind of interesting because I was at I was getting gas, and a gentleman approached me, and I guess he seen my T-shirt I was wearing. I was wearing my Mountain Empire Cryptid Research Organization T-shirt, and he's like, "Oh, Bigfoot." And I was like, "Yeah." I was like, "Have you had any encounters?" He said, "Actually, I have." And so, of course, you know, we got a chatting about it, and he was telling me that there were either two or three that were crossing this open field on the top of the mountain. And he claims that there were several witnesses, and that happened here just, it wasn't probably about a few months ago. So I've still got to research that. And said, you know, I'm really, really excited about talking to these witnesses and seeing, you know, what they've seen. It's kind of interesting because you've heard of white Bigfoot, but not more than one together. That's what really caught my attention. And I've had a lot of sightings around that area reported.
Wow, that's great. And I got to tell you something about wearing a Bigfoot shirt. You know that I sell life insurance, and I run a lot of events with chambers of commerce. And so today we did the quarterly – I sponsored – Transamerica sponsored the quarterly meeting of the Loras Chamber of Commerce. We had about 35 people there, which is pretty good for a town of 3,000. And so I've got my Bigfoot shirt on, and I've got my jacket. And so this lady, she's an artist, and she like pulls my jacket back. She said, "Oh, my God, I have to talk to you." I said, "Now, why is that?" So we got engaged in the Bigfoot conversation. We had 10 people standing around us listening to every word that we said. So many people, and it's really wonderful. I guess I got in the paranormal business before it was actually a business. But, you know, people really are interested in the paranormal. They're interested in three things. They're interested in UFOs, ghosts, and, of course, Bigfoot. And I just thought it was great. And here I am trying to sell life insurance, and a couple of my folks were with me, and they were just astonished. I became the most popular boy in the room because I was talking about Bigfoot. And, you know, people do like it. This artist lady, I got to talk to her because she said she's seen Bigfoot on her property up there in Loras, South Carolina, just on the other side of the North Carolina line from a little town called Tabor City, and in which I am actually investigating a UFO sighting from 1973 that was fairly spectacular, and no one has ever investigated this. So it's going to be a new entry in my second edition of Look Up in the Sky, Aliens, UFOs, and Anomalies. There are so many things that are coming out from the government and from researchers such as yourself and such as Jessica. Now, do you think you would have an opportunity before, because we've got about a month, do you think you might have an opportunity to talk to one of those people before the Georgia Bigfoot Conference and report to us there at the conference, Matt?
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, definitely.
I'd really like for you to. I think it's going to be great. So see what you can do, and you and I will talk about it, you know, offline and everything. We'll see if you can, you know, make something happen. I think it'd be great because it's up there. And describe the Bigfoot Preserve for those that don't really know a lot about it. Like about half, isn't it about 1,000 acres?
The actual preserve is. It's in the Jefferson National Forest, and it's kind of interesting because it's the background of that area. You've got all kinds of paranormal activity going on, and it's close to Big Stone Gap, which is also loaded with cryptids and ghosts and even a vampire, actually, a vampire story in Big Stone Gap. And
Now, Matt,
oh, yeah.
I'm going to stop you. Can you please tell us the vampire story?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, the little town of Big Stone Gap, they actually made a movie about the Big Stone Gap, and it's a coal mining town. Well, they've shut down most of the coal mining in that area now, so it's really small town. But back in the 1800s, I believe it was in the 1890s, it was really booming. The mines were going. They had immigrants coming in, and it was this one immigrant. He stood out from all the others. He was from England, and his name was Mr. Rupp, and he wore like a cape, I guess, supposedly, and a weird-looking kind of top hat, but he had real long, dark hair. He always kept to himself. Well, there's a town drunk, and he had come up missing. Well, at that same time, all these livestock and stuff, they were finding him drained of blood, so the town people, you know, they thought they had, you know, a curse on it. Something was going on. So, but then they found that town drunk, drained of blood about a mile from Mr. Rupp's cabin. Well, then later on, there was a guy that come through, you know, the traveling salesman that sell the tonics and like snake oil and stuff. Well, he had come up missing.
Oh, you mean Dr. John Stamey, that traveling salesman?
There you go. He had come up missing, and I guess they found him drained of blood close to Mr. Rupp's cabin. Well, the body count started piling up, so, you know, the whispers within town started going around. Well, the kids, you know how kids are, they're teenagers, they're like, all right, we need to find, you know, what's going on. It's all this activity around Mr. Rupp's cabin, so they went and they checked in on Mr. Rupp's cabin. Well, they supposedly had seen him with drinking blood. There was raw meat, body parts, animal parts, just raw all through the cabin. A really disgusting sight. And so, of course, they seen it, and they got frightened. They ran back to town, and they told everybody in the town. Well, the town had gathered up a posse, and they all went up to Mr. Rupp's cabin. Mr. Rupp wasn't there, and so they got to looking around. But the cabin, they seen body parts. It was just like a massacre sight inside there. It was really horrific. And so they burnt the cabin down, but Mr. Rupp has never been seen since. So,
can I interject here for a sec? This reminds me a lot about what we talked about last week with John LeMay, and he was talking about Western and vampire stories that were in the West. And the first thing that came to mind was cattle mutilations, and you just mentioned it there, which is they're cattle drained of blood and organs removed and things like that. But what you're saying now is it's kind of the same regard for also human things. And that was kind of what his theme was last week. But this seems like a more specific story, which is interesting because it has a historic perspective and makes you wonder. But you're also saying that there was some further evidence with this posse that they found out more things about that.
Yeah, they had actually, they went there and, you know, they were going to confront him and, you know, how the mob were back in those days. And I guess, you know, he was nowhere to be found, but they seen, I mean, this cabin was just a mess. It was nasty. They had, like I said, you know, organs, body parts, whatever, all through it. And so they burned it down, but they never did find Mr. Rupp, and he was never seen around there again.
Well,
sounds like that movie, American.
American Werewolf in London.
Well, it reminded me of that movie where the vampires from Europe came to the States, and they were in Louisiana, and they were all through the States. What was that movie? Interview with the Vampire? Was that with like Tom Cruise or something?
Oh yeah, Anne Rice. Yeah, that was a great one.
Potentially, there was a migration of cryptids or something. Who knows?
And Matt, let me ask you something. I am very interested in that story because I would like to get more information on that story and get it to our friend John LeMay. I mean, we talk all the time now, and I mean he has been so helpful to me in my career. He's actually editing my book, Lizard Man Companion. He's doing a full edit of it, and that's why it's delayed just a little bit. He's truly a friend. And in fact, Matt and Mark, I want you to put a date down. I want you to put down November the 12th, because that's when I want you to be at the South Carolina Lizard Man Festival, because John LeMay is going to be there. Lyle Blackburn will be there. Mark Muncy will be there. He wrote Erie, Florida and Erie, Indiana. I'll be there with my new books. And so we're going to have kind of an author fest. It's going to be kind of fun. And, Matt, definitely put November 12th down, okay?
Most definitely. That'll be easy to remember.
Mark,
that's my sister's birthday.
Oh, okay. Well, bring your sister, okay? And Mark, you better be there, too. You better be there, too.
Well,
this is going to be...
I'm on this part of the continent. Before I was on the West Coast, so when I was talking to Matt Delph before and yourself, but now I'm in Ontario, so it's a lot more easy to come down. But I have a question for you, Matt, and I don't want to, like, digress too much what you're talking about. I think that's really cool. But what you were talking about before, which was this albino Sasquatch. Now, I was thinking about things to talk about in this upcoming Georgia Bigfoot Conference, and obviously it's going to be my Bigfoot story, but it was all the things afterwards, a part of my research that came after in BC. And the one thing that always came up that was I looked through multiple, many, many, like hundreds of Bigfoot experiences or sightings, and the one thing that came up was genetic abnormalities. And not albino, but obviously you think of the classic Yeti, but one was described as autistic, which you think of as, like they thought it was an autistic like teenager or something, but then Bigfoot walked off and it wasn't human. So that was kind of a genetic abnormality. And the other one was a bunk leg one, where it was like they had the footprints after and it was like a clubbed leg type of Bigfoot experience. Now, the question that came to mind for me with these disabilities is possible inbreeding, because if you think like what the general population might be or genetic engineering of it, like that came up with it. Now you're saying about albino, that's kind of a genetic abnormality. Is there anything just by like what I just said there that like is kind of what you came to a conclusion with, or is there anything else you can expand on with that?
Well, the whole thing, you know, I don't know if it's actually albino or if they're just old and their hair has turned white through the years. Mm. They could be some elders.
I guess.
I'm not real sure, you know, because I've never heard of three of them or two or three, you know, together that were solid white. So it could be, you know, just the DNA, just kind of like if you have rabbits, you know, they've got different colors. But
that sounds genetic, though. It sounds genetic because it is a thing that's passed down through heritage, is albino type things.
Exactly. And it was kind of interesting because in that same area, not far from there, is where I took the She Squatchers group, and they got that video I took them up there and got a video that's on YouTube, and this thing's covered in white. But, of course, hair turns up white in the video anyhow because of their FLIR that they were using. But it makes me wonder, you know, if it's not a genetic that they're passing along through that. But most of the reports I've had in that area have all been mostly black or dark brown, except for this occasion here.
Have you heard of any other things in your research that has to do with other genetic issues or, like, disability things that you've come across? Because I came across two, and that was actually one thing I was going to potentially bring up. And now that you brought up this albino, that's something I can actually, like, reference you in. And if I do talk down in there in Georgia, you know, I think this is something that I at least bring up because of my background's always biological kind of things. I do, like, you know, massage and things. This is always something that I think about, or evolutionary, or, like, you know, genetic things. So is there anything else you can add to that?
I believe a lot of it, like you'll have like these tracks and stuff, I believe some of it could be inbreeding. But you've got so many different types of, you know, these Bigfoot entities, creatures, possibly, you know, prehistoric man. But it always comes back, you know, the DNA. You've heard Melba Ketchum's and stuff. But it's always got some kind of human DNA as well. So what makes me wonder, though, about the hair color, I guess it would be just if it's, you know, like anything else, I think a lot of it would just be, you know, genetics passed down, or they've gotten older, and so their hair's turned white or gray. A lot of your tracks, I think a lot of the feet, you know, sometimes you'll have like a three-toed or four-toed. I believe a lot of that is probably definitely inbreeding, or they could have suffered, you know, going around barefoot out in the woods, could have been a accident or whatsoever. I'm sure it's just like anything else. You know, you've got deer that have got, you know, that are different, that, you know, they've got the overbites, they've got, you know, just, it just depends. I believe it's just like anything else. Basically,
but can I ask you about this? So you're saying potentially the fact that they're old, which I agree with. That's a good one. But the fact that, like, in the vast majority of sightings, we're not seeing white ones, right? If it was a matter of just them being old, we'd see a lot more. Like, there'd be a proportion in amount of sightings that would be that elderly group. And the other thing is that there's a cluster in this particular area of this like specific one, if I'm understanding correct, right? Of this specific trait. So it's like, you know, you got to, like, make the connections here. And my connection is obviously a genetic one, because dealing with hair, whether it's albino or, you know, like, you know, you say have the same hair color as your grandparents, right? It's like, I think there might be some genetic factor here. And whether it's maybe inbreeding or genetic manipulation or something else. So I think this is something that could potentially be an avenue of going down as far as research.
Well, that's true. That's kind of like the with the whole eyesight thing. You've got reflective eyeshine and self-illuminating eyeshine, and I've had lots of reports of self-illuminating and it being different colors, and the tape de lucidum on the eye would determine the color of the reflective eyeshine on an animal is the mineral makeup of it. So it kind of makes you wonder, you know, how – it could be diet. I wonder if it could be diet. What makes up the mineral makeup in a lot of these organs and body parts in, you know, in these animals or humans?
Well, there was a guy on a previous podcast here that had to do a Bigfoot experience he had, where he talked about the illuminating eyes. And I always heard about this myself in my own research, and maybe even talking to you about this nighttime illuminating eyes factor. And in science, like in biology, if you look at, like, basic, like, animals, you know, they have – nighttime nocturnal animals have this. That's how they're able to see in the dark. It's, like, some reflective process in their lens, like, I don't know exactly, but something has to do with that makes their eyes red. And potentially are Sasquatch nocturnal animals, is that why we're not seeing them so much? Is that where they predominantly are able to navigate? And obviously, like, if I go in the Black Forest, like I've been in BC or anywhere else, without a flashlight or anything, like, I'm not able to navigate for shit. So, like, if I was able to find a Bigfoot, it would be difficult if they had that capability and I didn't, right?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. But, like, the whole thing with the reflective eyeshine, though, okay, whenever light comes in and it reflects back out on these animals. Now, most animals have that, except for most of your primates do not have that. Humans don't have that. And now with the self-illuminating, you know, you can prove it scientifically that, you know, it's a high-energy being. For example, the electric eel, that they can illuminate their own eye shine. But the way the eyeball is constructed, if it's self-illuminating, it's going to be blind and it can't see. That's what I think is very interesting. So what is actually glowing there?
Interesting. Now, does that make them more prone to...
I want to say something here. I have found out, and maybe I'm the last person to know this, but I have found out that rabbits have red eyes. And I saw
also
one.
I know, too.
Do what?
They're also albino sometimes too, right? The red eye, especially.
It was a white rabbit, and it was at my friend Will Rodriguez's house. He lives up in Lakemont, Georgia, and they keep a rabbit inside the house. And I looked at Amy. I said, "My God, the rabbit's got red eyes." She said, "Yeah, a lot of them have red eyes." And it was a purely white rabbit. And I just thought it was, I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to get involved in that discussion. But, yeah, rabbits have red eyes. And I saw one. Took a picture of it. And it was red. So there you go. So
I've seen it too. The question that comes to mind with me is, like, my background in psychology was with perception and things. And it's like, if you're able to perceive with the, like, vision, like ultraviolet spectrum or infrared spectrum or all of the above and more, right? You'd just be a glowing ball in a field a mile away. Like, they could avoid you, especially like how strong they are and things, right? And if they have this extra capabilities, which I would love to talk to you with about more, Matt, about your knowledge about this, but even just the basic capabilities of like being kind of in the gorilla state and like moving around and, you know, out navigating you in the dark, like, that makes sense. It, like when you talk about glowing eyes and things and that night vision or like nocturnal capabilities, which a lot of Bigfoot experiences from my understanding are, then this is potentially an avenue as well of research where it's like, as well as if you're Bigfoot hunting, how would you, like, sure you could wear a ghillie suit or whatever, but you still could be a glowing ball in the middle of a field, like in a forest compared to them, right? Like, they would see you a mile away.
Oh, yeah, they know you're out there before you even get out there. I'd say their senses are heightened. They're just so intelligent, and they definitely know that you're out there. And a lot of them know, if there's one out there, you'll know it. A lot of them aren't too shy, like a lot of people like to say. But, I mean, the ones that I've encountered and stuff, they'll let you know if they're out there. And you was talking about the red eye shine or whatever it was, the pink and red eyes is associated with albinos as well. So I need to do some research.
That's what came to mind when he was talking about
that.
That's what came to mind when he was talking about the bunnies there. I was like, wait, the white bunnies have red eyes too, don't they?
Yes, correct. And the color of the eye shine is all depends on the mineral makeup of the pectin lucidum that's on the eye. So I wonder what determines the mineral makeup. Is it dye or DNA?
Is there any reports of humans having this capability or this type of eyes, I wonder, or genetic abnormalities of, like, eye having this luminous lens?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. John. I've just got to say something here. This is a total victory against all these so-called scientists with so-called PhDs that say there's no such thing as red eyes in the animal world. I mean, I saw it. And I, you know what? I really like it when I see them be wrong because they're such know-it-alls. Them and their National Science Foundation grants, they're just a bunch of know-it-alls, and they don't know everything. I have complete disdain for so many of these, especially biologists. They think they know everything. They don't know a damn thing most of the time, pardon my grammar. But anyway,
a lot of these scientists are very compartmentalized as far as, like, what they know. Like, I know in my own, like, thing of, like, psychology or biology, it's like you're very narrow-minded because you're, like, so by the book, right? And I think somebody who's very cross kind of research, like, whether it's biology and anthropology and all these things that comes together and now cryptid research and things, that's where the real kind of, like, forward momentum is going to go. Not somebody who's really compartmentalized as far as, like, a PhD in something. You know what I mean? I think that's when a conversation like right we're having right here, we can, like, kind of brainstorm ideas. Like, and independent researchers are usually where a lot of forward momentum as far as research in the unknown happens.
Well, I just love the fact that I saw a rabbit with red eyes, and I have a picture of it. and the fact is, all these so-called... I'd prefer to call them so-called scientists because they are not actual scientists. I am a scientist because I investigate things, and I don't have any preconceived notions, and I don't have the National Science Foundation dictating what I'm going to find or not find. And that's what NSF does. I mean, they're crooked as a dog's hind leg, and I'll say that to every one of them. I had a knockdown drag out with the former head of grants at the National Science Foundation. And she just, all she wanted to do was preach what she wanted to preach. She didn't talk about research. And that's what I don't like about him. You know, Dr. Jean-Louis Lesage, who I used to work for, he said to me one time, you know, the most important thing that I can do as a scientist is investigate and not go off someone's agenda. I want to investigate, and, you know, I respect the man so much for that. I want to investigate. That's what science is about. And
the curiosity for the unknown, right? Like, you know, all the things that were invented with Tesla or whoever else, it was based off, like, curiosity. If you don't have that curiosity for things that you don't know or, like, you're willing to look there, that's where the real trailblazers happen, you know, the real leaders, right, as far as any type of research. But one thing I wanted to talk to you, Matt, about tonight, also, like, I'm thinking about this upcoming Georgia Bigfoot Conference and what I may talk about. And the other thing that's come up over the time is the UFO connection. Now, I've heard of multiple things and multiple theories about Bigfoot and UFO. Is there anything you can expand on with that you know about predominantly?
Oh, that's excellent. Actually, okay. You know, 20% of the UFO sightings and Bigfoot sightings are in the same area, and that's what's interesting is you got the Bigfoot community and the UFO community. They don't want to connect the bridge, but it was actually I believe it's like 1888. I'm not real positive on the date, but out west, out in California, the first case of UFO and Bigfoot related. Incident
in the 1800s.
Yes,
in the 18-
it was.
Wow.
Yeah, there was a these cowboys, these ranchers had a bunch of cattle mutilations, and so they got with the Indians, and supposedly they had claimed that they had seen. They said this moon had come down from the sky, and it let out three walking bears into the woods, and so that I believe is the first documented case of the connection.
Here's what I'm going to do,
no,
Matt. I'm going to call John LeMay after our show because he has a series of books that start at 1800, and he does every 15, 20, or 30 years. I'm going to ask him what if he can tell us about that so I can read on it, and the next time we come on here, I can get that story for us. How would that be?
That'd be excellent.
Now, yep. You mentioned the cattle mutilations as well. Like, that has a vampire aspect to it as well. And that's the one thing when John LeMay was on last week, when he was talking about the Wild West and these, like, guys getting their drain blown. That's the first thing that came to mind as well. And there's always the UFO connection with, like, they want genetic material and things. Now, part of my speculation, and again, like, you can only speculate about these things when you're dealing with the unknown, is that Bigfoot or some type of genetic engineered ground crew of other ETs that isn't suitable for this environment. So they have something that's suitable for this environment. Obviously, Bigfoot are totally suitable for this environment. Like, they're more than us even. Like, they can climb up a glacier like nothing. Imagine one of those little gray dudes trying to do that, right? Now, it's like, is there something where, like, they're working together or hierarchy, potentially, they're just in, like, a genetic engineered cryptid, as are potentially we?
That's a good thought there. You've got some, and you've also got these orb sightings with Bigfoot sightings. You know, is that a actual kind of like a third party that is using that orb as the eyes on the ground for the Bigfoot? You know, navigating them to whatever they possibly got going on there. But you've got so many different types of Bigfoot too. I think a lot of it is like prehistoric man. And, like the Indians that talk about the man of the woods, the forest people, and then you've got the other type that was just scary, the skookums, stuff like that. Then you have the kind that work with these UFO and aliens and everything else going on. But it makes you wonder, you know, are they experimenting with something? Are they just, you know, using them for their foot soldiers here to do their work, whatever they want, you know?
Absolutely, to be part of the biological life here, whether it's like foraging for like truffles or who knows what the hell they're doing here, but like it's like they seem to be, you know, doing their own thing. That's why maybe that's a reason why they don't bother with us so much. They're just on their own mission, just doing it here. And also could be the reason why we never find them, because they're all chipped. And if one ever like goes missing, as far as the ET organization goes, they're just like, bing, zap them right out of there, like beam them up, right? And we'll never find them. Potentially that's reason why they're so elusive as well.
Well, you look at, you've heard of the, like, Skinwalker Ranch, where these Bigfoot-type creatures are coming out of portals. And I've done a lot of research, like, right now with Jessica Jones. She's also part of it, this project that is called the Meadow Project. And we have a undisclosed location that they've got. I work with some great people in this group. And they've had, like, entities. They've actually seen a portal. Now, for a portal to open, you have got to, Angelia Shear, she was with MUFON, of course. We had talked to a Iowa scientist that said portals can open. They can't predict when they're going to happen. But what you have to have is a zero magnetic field and a solar flare. It's got to be so much energy. So what we've noticed is these creatures. Now, the Indians always talked about portals opening circles within circles when you see them. But if you've looked, we've done a lot of research, and it's a cube that these things are coming out of. Some of them are coming out of this, like, cube. So that is a third party. Yeah, a third party has engineered that. So they've used a lot of energy. It's got angles. It's not naturally made. So this third party has made that. Now, another thing that we noticed also when these portals and this other stuff, the radiation, of course, you got to have high power, high energy, nuclear energy, something to open these, to open it up. So if these cube-shaped things are being made by this third party, of course, it's got the angles and everything, and radiation spike. And one thing that we started doing is if we find tracks now, Bigfoot tracks, is we breathe to see if the radiation, if there's any radiation on these tracks, to let us know if they're coming from that interdimensional field, possibly alien or whatever.
And is there something to be said about the fact that how many Bigfoot sightings are so close to, like, civilization in, like, areas, obviously, that are nature, but it's, like, so close. Like, you would think that there would be more evidence than there actually is. And I think this type of hypothesis where they're able to go through portals makes a lot more sense when we see places in northern United States or even Ontario, where I live, and other places where it's like, you know, they're not just like staying out of our way. Like, it's eventually, I think we would stumble across like a dead body or something, like we would any other carcass. But like, it seems like this, there's something else going on where they're like very much like portal wise or being extracted out and being able to be like teleported almost into our environment.
Yeah, I've actually, and this is where you get the best research, is boots on the ground, researching out, you know, out in the field. I've done years of it, and I've come across, you know, tracks that just end in the middle of nowhere, you know, just stop in the middle of nowhere. And it's like, you know, where did it go? There's no possible, you know, why did the tracks just stop? It just vanished.
Interesting. Well, I like these angles that we can approach things by, because this is the things I think about, you know, not just the conventional, you know, you watch your average Bigfoot show and the way they portray them or documentary. It's like I'm looking at outside the box and talking about whether it was before genetic abnormalities or UFO connection and the implications that has to do with that. I think this is a cool angle that I would love to explore more talking to you, with you, Matt. Like, I know we haven't talked in a while, but you've always been an enlightening guy, and I really like this podcast says his direction is going.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, this is Dr. John. Something's bugging me, Matt. Where did you hear the Mr. Rupp story?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Where did you hear the Mr. Rupp vampire story?
You're breaking up. I can't hardly hear you.
Oh, really? I'm sorry.
Okay, there you go. That's much better.
I have to move around. I have something called roving internet. Sometimes it works here. Sometimes it works on the other side of the room. Where did you hear the Mr. Rupp story?
Actually, just through the locals, and then I did a little research, and if you Google it, you can you'll find a couple stories about it online, and that area, Big Stone and stuff, because, you know, that's where that sanctuary, because I was doing a lot of research on that sanctuary trying to figure out, you know, how much Bigfoot activity was in that area, where it all came from, and you get a lot of info from just talking to the locals, and it's like the whole sanctuary, they got a rock, it's called Flag Rock up there, which is pretty cool, is this guy, this settler, I forget his name, but he had placed this big flag on this rock up there, and he heard something rustling there in the mountains, and he looked up, and there was a Bigfoot watching him as he done it. And so, you know, that whole place has got lots of history. And then I love to talk to the locals and, you know, hear what has been passed down to them. And, you know, usually where there's smoke, there's some fire. So,
Absolutely. There's. Well, let me ask you this. I am going to be this weekend. I'm going to be in Clayton on Friday, Clayton, Georgia, on Friday doing some promotion for Georgia Bigfoot. And on Saturday, I'm going to be in Franklin. How far is Big Stone Gap from Franklin?
Oh.
Just about.
I'd say probably a good 4 hours, maybe five.
That far?
It's about 4 or 5 hours. You talking about from Clayton, Georgia there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about 4, maybe 5 hours. Because for me to get to Clayton is about 3.5, and then from my house to Big Stone, which is farther north and it's east, it is another hour to there. So I'd say it's probably
right,
about at least a good 4.5, 5 hours.
Let me ask you this. Is Ewing on Interstate 40, or there's an exit there?
No. I'm in close to Cumberland Gap, Tennessee. There are no – closest interstate is 75, and that's in La Follette, Tennessee, or Corbin, Kentucky.
Well, that's
Corbin,
like halfway between me and you, John.
We should meet up there
sometime.
Well, that's right. But now, do you know why we need to go to Corbin, Kentucky? What is the single most important thing about that town, Matt?
That is the birthplace of Kentucky Fried Chicken.
That is exactly right, and there's a museum there. And, oh, my God, the food is so good. It's great. Matt, thank you for recognizing that Colonel Harlan Sanders was actually from Harlan, Kentucky. And it's just unbelievable.
We got to explore that one, the Colonel Sanders Bigfoot connection later.
Well, that's right.
Yeah,
what we can do is call up our buddy Tony Filosi and get him to come down there, because he loves some Kentucky Fried Chicken, too. He's a paranormal investigator. We love Tony. He's great. He used to be a co-host on ScaryCast. So what we'll do is Matt, you and me and Mark, we're going to have to get together in Corbin, Kentucky, and eat us some Kentucky Fried Chicken. How does that sound?
Sounds excellent. I love Kentucky
Fried
Chicken.
That sounds like some good Bigfoot bait, too. You, like, lay out some Kentucky Fried Chicken for the Bigfoot. I'm sure they'll show up. I got a thermal camera. I got an infrared camera. we'll set it up, and we'll see how that goes.
Pardon my grammar, but I'll guarantee you they'll show up for some Kentucky Fried Chicken. It's great. So you know what? We have now found a reason, a commonality for forming a research group, and that's Kentucky Fried Chicken. Right, Matt?
Excellent, yes. And that KFC there, it's actually pretty cool because that's where Colonel Sanders used to live, too, in that first KFC. And they've got it. It's set up like a museum. You can go in there and see his bed and everything else that he had, you know, where he'd lived there in that Kentucky Fried Chicken, which it's a museum plus restaurant, which is pretty cool.
And you do know the story is that Colonel Harlan Sanders, he was a Kentucky colonel. He was not a United States military colonel. He approached 99 people about financing his idea for a restaurant, and when he hit the 99th person, they gave him some money, and that's where Kentucky Fried Chicken came, and it was on the New York Stock Exchange, and it's now part of Pepsi-Cola. And, I mean, you know, Colonel Sanders gets the award for persistence. So, I guarantee you Bigfoot is going to love some Kentucky Fried Chicken. Oh, my God, it's the best stuff in the world. Mark, have you ever eaten it? Mark, you haven't eaten at that one because it tastes all different. It's so much better than what you get from the regular ones. But anyway, I'll shut up now. Yeah. You got me all excited about Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Well, I'm excited to come and taste some of your southern, home style cooking when I come down there. But what I want to ask Matt is, like, what plans do you have for further Bigfoot, I don't want to call it hunting, but Bigfoot research getting out in the field? Like, what are your plans for this season as the weather gets better and you're able to go out in the field more?
Well, I'm going to, of course, I got my teams that I go out with, these classified expeditions. It's former military. Some of them are still military. They got some got a nuclear engineer on the team. I go out with them quite a bit, and that's just kind of random. They'll shoot me an email with some coordinates and say, hey, this is operation order for this location. So I go out with them. Of course, it's all, you know, classified. And then I go out and I help out with the BFRO. But this summer I've got so many cases and reports that I've got to do, of course, my own research to try and catch these reports up. And I'm going to try and host a expedition up there around the that sightings of the around Big Stone Gap and Norton, Virginia, there where that sanctuary is. Trying, you know, people that are just wanting to get out. So I'm wanting that because people come to me all the time. They're like, they want to go out and they want to do this and that. So I'm going to try and host a expedition sometime this spring or summer for beginners, and I'll have some experienced outdoorsmen, you know, on the team with me to help. And I'm just going to try and do as much research as possible. I got a trip set for New Orleans this summer, so I'm going to try and get out in the swamps out there. I'd like to go to Honey Island Swamp. I've got all kinds of stuff. I've got Dogman Werewolf reports. I've got loaded with stuff. I just haven't had the time to go out and actually investigate them yet.
You know, Matt, isn't it a shame that we have to have day jobs to so that we can afford to do what we love? Isn't it a shame?
Oh, I know. It just work things cutting into my social life.
I know. It's like I get home. I've already done two interviews. I've already done a half a day's worth of work, and then now comes Scarycast, and now I've got to call two people after this. After Scarycast is over, I mean, I might get in bed at midnight. I will have worked seven hours at my job that I love, which is paranormal research. And, you know, it's fun. It really is. We're interested in. And it's people like you and me and Mark. We are the people. We are not the I am a PhD scientist. But we are not those guys stuck in the National Science Foundation rut. We are out creatively doing research, and it's hard because you know what else, Matt, and I think this is the toughest thing. We have to fund our own research, don't we?
Yes we do.
Let me ask you a personal question. Who is paying for your New Orleans trip? Is that you? I bet it is.
Yep, I've done bought and paid for it.
That's
not counting the money, though, that I'll spend while I'm there.
Right. Right, I got to tell you about a good place to eat hoagies down there. It's really good. But anyway, what I'm saying is it's those of us that have the creative spirit and the creative mind, and we're not afraid to spend a little bit of money. You know, I'm not afraid to spend money on the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. I absolutely love Georgia and Tennessee Bigfoot Conference. Bigfoot showed up at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference. We have pictures online. When Jessica Jones and I were talking and she looked at those pictures of those stick structures, she said, "Oh, my God, I can't believe this happened." I said, "Well, it did." You know, and that's just the way it is. I mean, we get fortunate, and we do have a little bit of, what's the word? We do have a little bit of cooperation from Bigfoot, I think, which is kind of neat. But, you know, I love what I do, and Matt, I know you love what you do, or you wouldn't do it all the time, correct?
That's correct. It's definitely a journey for me.
And Mark, the last question is for you. You wouldn't be coming down to Clayton, Georgia, if you didn't love this stuff, right?
Well, yeah, and like I was saying when we first started this podcast tonight, it's like you guys were the first ones I talked to on your original Bigfoot and Company podcast. Matt Delph was the guest at the time, just so happenstance, and, you know, connected and have through the years. Thank you, Matt, for all of your insight on things. I think you've been one of the most integral people in my further understanding of Bigfoot. But going back to, doing the Bigfoot investigations, like, before I used to live in West Canada, now I live Niagara Falls, which is only a stone's, like, a few hours away from you right now. I would love to come down and obviously Georgia Bigfoot Conference, but as well we can meet up for either, I'm an outdoorsy type as well, getting out in the field and doing things. I have a camera for night vision camera and things, and I would love to potentially have that experience as well. I'd be down to further my understanding and just getting out there and hopefully Bigfoot experience number two at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
Then maybe
all three of us need to go out and find Mr. Rupp because he's still there. I just got that vision that Mr. Rupp is still there and he's just out there in the woods.
Well, they claim that area where his cabin was, I've been trying to find it. They said that there's a red spring. Of course, they say it's red because of the sulfur coming from the ground, which would make sense with coal, you know, being in that area. But a lot of them say that area of the woods where his cabin was is haunted, and I'm trying to locate it, trying to find out where it's actually located so I could go and just feel the energy there, you know. It could be a really interesting area.
Do you do any ghost things, Matt, like ghost explorations as well? Or just Bigfoot?
I just got done from about, I don't know, it was 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago. I was in Nashville. A friend of mine had sent me a video. It's on our page. He hosts the show, Mysterious Huntsman. And Paul had sent me a video of a cloaked figure around these three statues. I don't know if you've seen that or not, Mark. We had posted it there in my group. And there's a cloaked figure, and it's hovering over this wishing well. And he got a good look at it, videoed it, and I'd went out there probably about 2 weeks after he had seen it, and I got a feel for the area and some strange stuff had happened there. And it's in Nashville, and I had my phone died on me twice, drained the energy. It felt sad there. I took pictures of where the cloaked figure was. And then at nighttime, it got super cold. And my thermal, it could have been wind chill, but around the statues, it went from 19 down to negative 2. But it could have been, like I said, the wind chill factor. But I had noticed a figure, and this is what's pretty wild, was George Jones's grave is buried there in that cemetery as well. And I'd seen a figure. It looked like a figure. I tried to catch it on thermal, but didn't have any luck because I was looking through the thermal when I seen it. my thermal don't have video. It's only take pictures. So,
Matt, I'm going to stop you and say that I had lunch with George Jones' manager today.
Oh, nice.
Of all things, and she lives in Loras, South Carolina, Mrs. Keene, and she's opening a bakery. And she wants, and she also has, you know, Bigfoot statues in her yard, and she loves me. And she was, and she wants me. So let me tell her, Matt, can we have a short, I know you have to work, but can we have a short
right.
talk after this? And I want to get a little information about the George Jones thing, because I want to talk to her. She's very receptive about this. And she was on tour with George for 4 years. This is incredible.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, definitely.
Synchronicity to the max. So let's see. We're checking around. We got 4 minutes left, so everybody's got 1 minute, and I've got 1 minute, and we'll finish at 59 minutes. So, Matt, what have you got going on? What do you want to tell everybody about? You got 1 minute. Go.
All right. I will be at the, of course, the Georgia Clayton Bigfoot Conference, and that area, that's my focus right now. I'm going to plan on probably doing some research out there, because I've had activity out there, but I've got so many reports and stuff, it's just timing with work. But this summer, it's going to be full-blown investigations, expeditions, and so on.
Well, that's great, and hopefully I can be out there with you for at least one investigation. That would be a lot of fun. Would you have me?
Most definitely.
Well, great. Thank you. Now, Mark, what are you working on?
Well, first of all, I'd love to just want to say thanks for being on the podcast today, Matt. You're always a pleasure to talk to. I know we've talked over the last few years since I was originally on that podcast, and like I was saying before, you're always a wealth of information and always opening my mind up to new possibilities when it comes not just to Bigfoot research, but cryptids in general. And I'd love to see you guys and have a drink with you guys down at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. We'll see how the border opens up. I think, you know, Canada's kind of being like really harsh on that, me leaving the country, but we'll see how that goes. I really would love to meet you guys down in person and have a good time and talk about things that we're talking tonight. For one being the genetic abnormalities, I would love for you to expand on that. Maybe we can talk later about that, Matt, and as well as the UFO connection in that one story, the historic story with 1800s with the UFO, because I think, you know, just from like deductive reasoning, I think like coming to a conclusion, connecting the dots, I believe that there is something to that, and with the whole portal situation. So maybe that's something I'll focus on and talk about when I come down to there to Clayton. And thanks again for being on again tonight, Matt, and I hope to talk to you soon. Come back and be our guest again soon.
Yes, I appreciate it.
Absolutely,
definitely.
Matt. And I guess what I'm doing is I'm putting the final touches on the Bigfoot Field Study and Research Guide, the one that we put together 2 years ago with Igor Burtsev. We've got some new things in there with Robin McRae and Mind Speak. And just was very fortunate to talk with, Harriet McFeely tonight, who runs the Nebraska Bigfoot Conference. And we've got some great things coming out with her. So I wanted to say thanks to Matt Delph, thanks to Mark Johnson, and thanks to everybody listening. We love doing what we do, and we're going to keep doing it. Are we going to keep doing it, Matt?
Oh, most definitely.
Mark,
appreciate
are we going to keep doing
show,
it?
Keep doing what our hearts are at. I believe this is it, and I believe there's something to this we're exploring, and it's really a pleasure and honor to be there with you guys doing this.
I got news for you. We know there's something there. It's wonderful. So, look, everybody, take care. We'll see you next week, Tuesday night, 9 p.m. We've got guests scheduled for like the next month and a half, because everybody wants to come on our show, Mark. So, anyway, we'll see everybody.
Bye-bye.
Have a good night, guys. Bye.
Good night.
Here. Au revoir. Finish the show. Make sure she hits the show.